Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. This is the August episode, marching right through summer into fall. Oh, dare to think about the colder weather, but it is what it is. That's just how life rolls, right, from one to the next. We're excited to have you here, though, for another great show, the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here for some news, some support. Show really about you, the listener. If you're a family member with someone that you know that has FSH, or a friend, or maybe you have FSH, this show is for you. Spread the word about the show. We'd love to have you do that and get your friends to listen in and learn more about what the FSH Society is, what FSHD is. It's a great source for all those things. Why don't we start with a little bit of that contact info for you? If you want to get a hold of me, you can do that very simply. You can email me if you'd like. That's sometimes a good way to do that. FSHradiohost@gmail.com. The FSH Society show number is, phone number is 949-270-5953. You can follow the show on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at FSH Society, all through FSHsociety.org. Of course, there's the chat room. How could I forget? There's a great chat room out there for you as well through the Blog Talk Radio, which is how we broadcast the shows. We broadcast them all through Blog Talk Radio. If you want to know when a new episode is scheduled, and you want to know when a new episode is coming up, you follow the show on Blog Talk Radio. I get a lot of questions, and they're great questions. How can I find the show? Can you send me the link? I'm always happy to do that for you. I did that a couple times this week to some great listeners out there who wanted to learn more about the show, listen to the show tonight. When's the next show on? That will help you find out all that info for you. You just follow the FSH Society Radio, you know, page on Blog Talk Radio, you're going to know. We do try to splash it out there on social media and try to let you know when those new episodes are out. But if you want to be in the now, like right away, the Blog Talk Radio following is probably the best choice to go with. Anytime, too, you guys can reach out to me. You know, I had a kind of a call to all those out there that wanted to share their FSH story. If you were a family member or someone that has FSHD or caregiver, it's affecting you personally, your life, your family. You wanted to share your story with me. I wanted that because we were starting something called the Story Corps. It was actually a idea that June Kinoshita had. We were going to kind of kick it off a little bit more in Vegas and actually record some shows there or some interviews there. That didn't quite work as we wanted. So I made a video and kind of calling you all out, hey, here's the show. But on top of that, here's what I also want. I'd love to have you guys share your stories with StoryCorps through the FSH Society radio show and get it recorded. I've already have one set up coming up this weekend. A gentleman, I think Nova Scotia is where he's out of, and we're going to record his story. I had somebody else share today via email. Fantastic, fantastically strong story. Just someone that has FSH in their family strongly. Someone that wanted to share that story with me. And I was really taken aback the fact that they did that. I loved it that they shared their story. For a story such as that, perhaps, you know, you would like me to narrate it on your behalf. I thought of that today because I'm gonna share her first name. Alicia sent her story and let me know that how FSH has affected her family, how she's affected her sister's life, her family's life. It was a great, touching story. And it looks like she's out of Arizona. And it was fantastic to get that. It was emotional for me to read it because it's tough. It's tough to hear people going through such struggles, you know. But at the same time, you know, we're not alone. And that's really what this is about. So with her story, you know, I offered to record her story if she'd liked in her own words. But it also made me think maybe you guys are shy a little bit to put your voice out on to be recorded. Then just send me an email, such as Alicia did, and I'll be your narrator. I'll say it out loud, and we'll tell the story that way. And said I have good plans for the StoryCorps project to really kind of put these stories together in nice clips that we can play during episodes, possibly at breaks that we've done before, you know, more FSH information style, you know, public service announcements that we put in our little breaks in between, you know, guests and the monologue piece and that, you know. And I'd like to maybe put those stories in there and maybe have a show devoted to the stories and also a place that we can put it somewhere where if you want to click on those, you can listen to them for inspiration when you need it. So I understand the importance and I understand the gravity of what I'm taking from you guys being your story, your personal story. I don't want you to think that I'm flippant about it or anything like that. I care very deeply for what you have to say. And if that's going to be through the StoryCorps project or live here on the show, you know, so if you were inclined to share your story in the chat room, I'd read that out loud, of course, and or questions for our guests, or if you wanted a call. So I just wanted to share that with you that there's another avenue besides you setting a time to record your story. I could narrate it for you. So maybe more of you would rather go that avenue, and I'd be happy to do that. I'd love to do that too. The other thing is, of course, our great featured guest that I alluded to, right? If you haven't looked already on Book or FSH Society, it's Kristen Duquette. She has a phenomenal resume, and it would probably take several minutes for me to go through all the things that she's been doing in her amazing young life already, and it's just it's phenomenal. To name a few, she has worked for the President Barack Obama, spoken at United Nations headquarters, and represented the United States on the U.S. Paralympic swim team, five-time American Paralympic record holder, three-time junior national record holder in swimming. This is all in swimming, I believe. The former captain of the U.S. Paralympic swim team for the 2010 Greek Open, and it goes on and on. So there's a lot of great stuff we're going to talk about with Kristen. I cannot wait to have her on. Amazing, amazing woman that is just has done a lot with her life thus far and is willing to share it with us today. And I hope that you're all excited to hear her story and as excited as I am to help bring it to you. So really looking forward to that guest tonight, you know. And that really leads me then to the next part is really strong kudos to you know, Jun Kinoshita, who gives me these, you know, I really don't take a lot of credit for getting a lot of these guests. There are a couple that I might have reached out to or efforted to get in past shows, maybe a couple here and there, but it's really all on Jun Kinoshita. She is the great guest booker for sure. Maybe I do the finalizing booking, but the ideas come from June, and the idea is to have these types of guests on and to have the contacts that quickly to me that I can reach out to them just so we can start booking these guests quickly is just phenomenal. We're already working on September's show. We're working on already October's show, so stay tuned for that. I actually just sent a message out to possibly our September guests. So if they answer back during the show, I can you know, tease that out there before we say goodnight tonight and let you know who the September guest could be. So it's just, you know, one show rolls to the next, and it's always exciting to see who we're going to get next. And there's more, possibly out there. So I'm excited, though, for tonight's for sure. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you want to get in touch with me, once again, let me give you that contact information. I always rattle through it pretty fast. It's fshradiohost@gmail.com. That's directly to me. You get an email sent to me immediately right here, and I'll do my best to answer while I'm live on air. And, of course, if you have questions for our guests, you can email them that way. You can go to the chat room on Blog Talk Radio. I believe we actually already have – yes, we already have a guest in there right now, guest 966. You can be anonymous in there if you'd like or use your name. You can do that. You can follow the shows, what's going on FSH Society on Twitter, on Facebook. And, of course, the show number to get into the studio here is 949-270-5953. So a lot of exciting ways to get a hold of me here. The last show, last month, we talked about National Chapter Program, right? We talked about how two fantastic people, Beth Johnston and Lee Reynolds, came in to the show. Well, okay, called into the show. It would be great if they were here. But they called into the show, and they talked about starting those chapter programs. And we have, looks like, to give those areas some credit here, some kudos for working hard and getting those set up. Columbus, Ohio, San Francisco, Sacramento, Atlanta, Mid-Atlantic area, Los Angeles, Colorado, Chicagoland, my buddy Dave Lucas up there. Shout out to you, Dave. Philadelphia has got one. Arizona, Connecticut, Kathy. Hey, hopefully I'll make that meeting coming up. We'll tease your meeting coming up next week. Hope I can be there. And then the Boston, New England area as well. So a lot of coverage, a lot of groups being formed, a lot of chapter groups being formed. And, of course, a lot of those are rolling out the huge walk and roll out there to cure FSHD. Check out where those events are happening near you. I think a lot of those are doing those coming up here in the fall months. Probably when it's a little cooler, right? A little more comfortable to take a walk and roll, I would imagine, is probably the idea there. It's pretty smart. I wish I could attend one if it was a little more near me, but who knows? I might surprise some of these out there. Let me quick tease those since we're on the subject of those walk and rolls. You got September 8th, Colorado has one. Dublin, Ohio, on September 15th. Alameda, California, September 16th. September 22nd, Puyallup, Washington. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Cary, North Carolina, October 7th. So those are some of those walk and rolls going on out there. So a lot of great people doing great things to get things going. All right, so why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we're going to bring in our featured guest. We're going to talk with Kristen Duquette a little bit and have a great conversation with her and hear about her life and the great things she's doing out there. So why don't we take a quick break? You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD. And share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Welcome back to the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here, hanging out a little bit during the break as we're getting ourselves set up here to bring in Kristen Duquette, talk a little bit about her life, her FSH story. If you want to send some questions our way to Kristen or even myself, that's fine. You can do that. FSHradiohost@gmail.com is my email. You can go to the chat room on Blog Talk Radio. That's a great way. Before you let in Kristen, one little quick correction. The guest I was talking about that, or the listener that I was talking about, sending that phenomenal story about her family and FSH and that how we can use that, too, in our story core. She's not from Arizona. She's from Arkansas. I apologize. Both beautiful states. So, yeah. Anyhow, so we got that corrected. Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for listening, more importantly, right? Fantastic. So why don't we bring in our our featured guest. It's Kristen Duquette. If I could, I could give her the full introduction here, but it might take us the whole time that we have her on. Hello, Kristen. How are you?
Hi, Jay. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. I'm glad that you're on. You're coming in loud and clear here. I love it. And really excited to have you on, especially with someone with so many experiences in your life to share with us. It's impressive is not quite saying it enough. I mean, that's just not the right word. I don't know what it is. I don't know what that word is, but it's phenomenal, I guess. So welcome aboard. Thanks for taking the time out of your life and your schedule to join us.
Oh, thank you so much. You are too kind. And, you know, I think that being on your show and having that outlet to talk to other people that are going through experiences that I've gone through, that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree with you. This was what we hoped. We being, you know, especially me and June, when we started the idea, you know, a couple of you, well, it's almost, what, 2 years ago now, something like that, when the idea started, not necessarily the first show. But, you know, that's what we thought. We're like, hey, this would be fun, you know, of course, because it is always fun to connect with people, especially when you share common things like this, you know, and informative and just, you know, just a great collaboration of people coming together and talking about their struggles and talking about their triumphs. And it sounds like here that you have some of both of those maybe to talk about today. Why don't I start you where I start most of our guests, so I think almost all of them. Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about, you know, I guess I call it with air quotes here, you know, your FSH story, or, you know, your story of you, I suppose.
Gosh, I will try to keep it at a very high level. I honestly don't know how I keep up with myself. I'm just going to frame it like that. But I was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy, FSHD, at age 9, actually the week of my birthday. I wanted to be an Olympic swimmer, and my mom always knew that something was a bit off. She would see me on the pool deck, and she would see that my shoulders weren't going back. And even before that, when I was like 3 years old, we'd be in the grocery store, and I would just sit down in an aisle and just say, I'm tired. And so she was the one that always kind of knew something was off, even though FSH does not run in my family, meaning then that how I got the condition is through a gene mutation. So I was diagnosed at 9. I really had no clue what that meant. No one in my family really knew what that meant either. So what was that, early 2000s? I remember when I got the nerve test that they have to do on you with the needles, and I forget what that test is called. But they shock your muscles to see if
right.
it's your nerves or your muscles.
Yep.
And the only thing as a 9-year-old that I cared about, because everything was kind of just going over my head, is I was going to get a Britney Spears CD like that. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but like, I'm going to get a CD out of this. It's going to be my first CD. I'm going to get a CD player. And it was, you know, you go through it. You want
yeah.
that Britney Spears
right.
CD. So I was diagnosed. And then at the time, I was doing about 6 different sports. And my parents had my older sister and I doing sports camps and going away camps over the summer. And it was so great. And I started to realize within that year period, I wasn't keeping up with people. I remember distinctly swimming. I was at I was the anchor of a relay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right after I was diagnosed. And usually when you're the anchor of a relay on the swim team, that means you're the fastest, usually.
Mm.
And
okay.
I had to do 50 free, so back and forth. And I still remember to this day, diving in, doing the flip turn, hitting the wall, and the side of my eyes, not seeing anyone. So I was like, wow, I'm so fast. Like, I'm really up there. And I hit the wall, and I realized that I am the only person in the pool because I am that slow now. And everyone was clapping for me because I finally finished. And that was kind of the point of, okay, maybe I shouldn't be doing that many sports. So I kind of stopped swimming, and I stopped doing all that. And that summer was the last time I did diving on my diving team. And I still remember for those championships coming in third, and I was like, wow, I have this condition I don't know about still. I don't really understand. As a nine-year-old, I'm thinking that. And I was like, I don't think anyone else I'm competing with has a muscular condition that they were just diagnosed with. But so after that, I just kind of quit. I quit all sports. I didn't know anything about disabled sports or anything. I'm a very type A person to the point where I wrote contracts to my parents. If I got straight A's, I would get XYZ and have them sign and deed it and put it on the fridge. Like, that is the kind of personality I have in growing up. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. I don't think I ever pulled that one.
No, I did. I was also told, too, like, my nickname was Pistol P. And at one time, too, later on, some of my coaches called me a pit bull because I just couldn't stop, right? So, like, that in conjunction with, you know, all of a sudden at a very young age, like, your body is degrading in ways that you don't understand. How are you dealing with that, right? And then also on top of that, I grew up in a Catholic, I went to a Catholic elementary school in Connecticut, so there wasn't anyone really like me at all. And also in that context too, it's not like in a societal context, it's not like we see disability representation on a level as a young girl to know that that's okay to embrace that, right? So dealing with all that, I slowly stopped running when I was about 11. And so during that time, I was kind of limping when I was walking. And I remember in the fifth grade, the nurse had to come into my class and tell my class that, like, the specific condition that I had, because, like, yes, this is why, like, Kristen doesn't fully smile. This is why she limps. This is why blah, 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 right? And all of that on those contexts, that takes a toll, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. That takes a psychological, social, and emotional toll, especially on an 11-year-old. I couldn't be in the room, and I was made fun of. I think kids can be really mean. I'm just going to say that across the board. I'm sure we all have experiences, whether you're disabled or not, but it's not like those experiences were easy. Let me put it that way. And so I just really started to deteriorate. I threw myself into my academics. I took up the violin because I still wanted to be really great at something. So I didn't really feel like I was that social and connected with other people my own age growing up, but I threw myself into things that I really cared about and hung out with my parents and people older than me that somehow saw me for me and not necessarily the 12-year-olds around me at the time. And that has nothing to do with them, right? That's just, like, the context of my story. And I would say that I started to use a walker going a little bit after high school or a little bit into high school. Maybe when I was 16, and using a wheelchair too for long distances when, probably eighth grade was the first time I used a wheelchair in front of all my friends at, like, a field trip, and to kind of see too, like, I have a very hard time struggling with how perception wise of myself, seeing myself, and then
mm-hmm.
other people, like my peers, seeing me physically not doing that great. And
right.
I think that being disabled, it's not, our condition is very different, right? It's not like you wake up and you're in a hospital and legs are amputated, or you have a spinal cord injury and like, boom, that's it. It's a hard cut, right? Like
mm-hmm,
for
right.
us, this is slow. And
mm-hmm.
what I have found across the board, because now I had to stop standing and walking in 2015 because it just wasn't safe for me anymore. So right now I use a scooter full time. And I'm 27, right? So I think it's very fascinating if I take a step back from my life
mm-hmm.
that my body has changed so much over time, but yet I am still real. I'm not even 30, which
right.
is crazy to think. And so I think it's kind of incredible to have all these, like, just set aside everything that I've lived in my life, right, and everything
mm-hmm.
I've accomplished, but just think about all the different social interactions mm-hmm. I've had with different people in different periods where my body was at different levels. I think it's very fascinating. And what a life well lived already at 27.
I mean, you've done a lot at 27 than most people have done. Well, more than me, and I'm 43. and what I found fascinating about when you're talking about being the younger person that was struggling with this, your family doesn't know what it is. You don't know what it is. You're still a 9-year-old girl that loves Britney Spears, and you know you're still 9, right? And
right.
so, when you hit 12, it seemed like you know things took that next step downward. You know, my doctor calls it stair falls. You know, you take
yeah.
a stair fall down. You know that it comes and drops, and it seems like
yeah.
maybe around then you took one of those, and then high school you're using more of a walker, and then a wheelchair and long distances. You're right. The first thing I thought of is because I was bullied in high school, not because I had
right.
FSH, because no one knew I had it. Obviously, I did, and things were different for me, but they weren't obviously to the extreme that you dealt with. Mine moved a lot slower and more affected me now later. So I was bullied for
yeah.
other stupid reasons, but I could
yeah.
I can't imagine you going through that at those ages, and then. Like me, I could somewhat fight back to some degree. That's finally what had happened for me. But I don't think your story had played out that way, you know, for those people that bothered you about it, you know, or teased you about it or said mean things. Because you're right, kids can be cruel. I think we've all been there at that age.
Right.
And, you know, when kids are mean, especially when they see something they don't understand, and so they
right.
kind of act out in fear, like, oh, you know, that kind of scares me the way that person is. And I don't understand it, so I'm just going to act out in this negative tone. Some kids, not every kid, obviously. So
right.
that must have been very tough for you to deal with at those ages, on top of the fact you had to figure out what the heck is this going on with my body and taking away the things you loved, like competition and, you know, swimming and diving and then running. It's like, holy mackerel. That's a lot to take. And then at 27, to use that, it sounds like, as fuel. Was that kind of... Did that fuel your fire to continue to do all the way to what you're doing now?
I don't think this actually really fueled anything per se.
Okay.
I often, how I would think of it as, I remember distinctly right after I was diagnosed, I get this diagnosis. I don't know what it means at all. I remember my parents talking to me and I was like, I have no clue what this is. And I remember thinking to myself, like, all right, this seems invisible. So as long as I can still play with my friends and be with my friends, like, I don't care. And, that's where I think when I started to consistently trip and fall at school. And thank God I did not grow up in an era with social media and cell phones, because I'm not sure how I would have dealt with that on top of everything. And I really feel for people that are diagnosed at a young age now, and I think that social media can be used in a great way too. There's got to be that balance. But yeah, growing up, there was distinctly, and I'm saying this story because I'm a human being. We all have gone through things where we're like, wow, I don't know where this is going to go. And so I remember in middle school, a kid, he said that I was eye pollution, that how I walked was eye pollution. Right. And when you're 13 years old and you already have like braces and really like oily skin and you just like look awful.
Right.
No one wants to go back to middle school, first off. Right.
No,
but what
no,
I'm saying,
no.
Right. Right. What I'm saying, though, is when he was saying those things, I believed it. Like, I believed it was true. I didn't even try and say anything different. Right. And I was definitely in a period where I had depression. Like when I was 12 or 13, I went home and I just slept. I didn't want to do anything. I kind of thought, like, what is the point to all of this if my body is going to keep deteriorating at such a drastic point? And my parents are incredible. They told me that knowledge is power and how incredibly smart I was. And I knew that, right? Like I was able to study because I was taking pictures in my brain of what I needed to study in a book. And I knew that, but there was always something missing, right? And so I will consistently say time and time again that swimming has saved me so many times. And I am a huge proponent of anyone with any kind of body to get in the water and move around. But more than that, well, the reason why I think swimming saved me at such a young age was going against the societal factors of thinking that a disabled person cannot be physical, cannot be competitive, cannot own their body, cannot be confident in those ways. And that's where I really found myself was in the water.
Now, you bring up, your swimming career, because you mentioned in your speech that you passed on to me, to kind of, you were talking about, the Paralympics and that, how you were signing autographs when you were part of that. And that was in Europe and South America, but here in the United States, nobody knew about it or what it was about or when it was on or how could they see it, unlike
right.
obviously Olympics or those things. So, tell us a little bit about that, about, getting into the games, and it sounds like you must have then reignited your swimming career to be that competitive in it yet again.
Yeah, funny you say that. I wanted to, when I started high school, I'm just thinking about my story, and I'm like, this is exhausting. I'm exhausted, but when I started high school, I knew that 85% of the people that I went to high school with, which again was a private Catholic high school in Connecticut, they all did sports. And they're just across the board, there is no greater feeling of feeling belonged and accepted, like no matter what you're living with, who you are, right? And so, and amongst your peers, I felt accepted amongst adults. But I was 13, and I don't understand. I, at the time, didn't understand, like, why do you want to drink wine on a Friday night? Like, this doesn't make sense. And I was like, yeah, it doesn't, because you're 12, right? Like, you're 12. So I tried to be a manager of a sports team here and there. I tried to do basketball. I tried to do tennis. And I was like, this is awful. I don't like sitting behind the lines and, like, doing stats. Like, I know I'm smart. Like, I can do this. but I want to be out on the field. And so I literally sat down with myself in the beginning of high school, a little bit after freshman year, and I was like, I want to be with my friends. Who are my friends? My friends are swimmers. I used to swim. I'm in a completely different body right now, but I must remember in my brain how to swim. And funny enough, throughout time, and still to this day, I dream about swimming in different forms of my body that I've been in, which is, like, very fascinating. I was like, you know what? I'm going to reteach myself how to swim. And I'm going to reteach myself how to swim for a year. And this is, again, where, like, my pitbull personality, gutsy personality comes out. I'm going to reteach myself how to swim for a year. I'm going to get straight A's so my parents can get me a gym membership down the street from East Catholic. And then I am going to train and swim 600 laps in one day to prove to the high school coach that regardless that I am not going to be fast enough in adding points to swimming, I want to be on that team even though I'm disabled. And when I say 600 laps, it's that the pole was like a 10.5-yard pole, which is essentially like a little bit bigger than like a, I don't know, a bathtub almost. Like it's very, very small in the scheme of swimming. So for a whole year, my parents and, you know, while people my own age were getting their license or their driver's permit, I was going to the pool and reteaching myself how to swim and setting my heart on fire was something that I finally felt like I belonged in. And I was alone, and I just imagined being like on Michael Phelps, or kind of just like just letting my imagination run wild while I was starting to love my body again in ways that I had when right before I was diagnosed. And I think that's probably one of the most peaceful memories I still have to this day of swimming in that pool and counting my laps and singing to myself different songs and no one talking to me and me just running through my mind of being a world-class athlete, clearly not knowing that would ever actually come into existence one day. But so when I did hit that goal, I emailed the high school coach. And she emailed me back that following May. It was my sister's junior prom. I clearly remember it because we all had a bunch of people over to take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this email from her, and she said, yeah, of course. Like, you, just by reading everything that you said you did, you have the tenacity, the determination, and the passion to be a Paralympic athlete. And we... Connecticut has been known to get to bring up some great Paralympic athletes in the country. And I would only say you can be on our high school swim team if you start to train for the Paralympics. And that was in 2007. And I had no clue what the Paralympics were. Like, even when I was reteaching myself how to swim, I had no clue what that was. And I just kind of trusted this innate gut feeling I had that I was finally doing something right. And that kind of is how it all started to kick off. Yeah.
Wow. You know, you said that in the story there that you were talking about getting back into the pool and getting into swim. And you set goals for yourself, right? You said, I'm going to do this. I'm giving myself a year. I'm going to do this. And then you achieve those goals.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you did that, you said, even with your parents, and you said, you know, how you did that contract, which is basically a goal. You're saying, I'm going to do this,
right.
You're going to sign that, you're going to follow through with me on this. So
right.
You are obviously a goal seeker. So was it your goal then to get your bachelor's degree at 24 years old in human rights? When did that goal start?
I actually, way back, if we're going to go way, way back, I wanted to be a marine biologist when I was 7. I then, after I was diagnosed, I wanted to be a physical therapist and go to Northeastern university. I'm in Boston and be this, like, physical therapist with muscular dystrophy and helping other people with muscular dystrophy. So I think just, like, all together, one of the things that I inherently took away being diagnosed at such a young age is I remember doctors telling me, what you are doing today is going to affect how your body is going to be in the future. And I really took that to heart. So, and I think that overall sentiment stretched out to other aspects of my life, right? So, and even to this day, it's very, I constantly think like, okay, what am I doing today that's going to affect my future tomorrow? And what is it that's going to positively affect it? And you know, I've added a bit of type V in there too, and not trying to control everything. But I chose human rights because I actually loved sociology. But I felt like sociology is critiquing a lot of things, and that's fine. But I was like, what am I going to do constantly critiquing? Why not actually apply it to do something? So I chose human rights as that was a major offered at Trinity College. And I actually took that major to heart as kind of my moral code in seeing the basis of, like, if we strip everything down on societal levels that we create to divide all of us, what are the innate rights that every single human being has on this planet? And then how are we applying it back into our societies and back into our government? So was it a little bit hard to find a job after college? Absolutely. Did I ever think, like, man, should I have majored in engineering, even though I hate math? Absolutely, right? But the advice that I would give people is, just follow your gut, and, you know, maybe a little bit idealistic of saying follow your passion too, but you will land wherever you're going to land, even though after I graduated college, I had no clue where I was going to land.
Yeah, because here, you know, if we go then down the timeline here, from December 2015 to March 2017, it says you were, this is a long title, so everybody bear with me now, confidential assistant to the chief of staff for the National Endowment for the Arts under the Obama administration. Obama administration sticks out like a sore thumb there. So you were on the Obama administration.
I was, yeah. Yep.
That is that is phenomenal. That is phenomenal. And I hope everybody's jaw just dropped. Yeah, that's awesome. So here you're wondering, I don't know what I'm going to do with this degree after I graduate. You know what? I'll just go work for the president.
I mean, you put it in very simplistic terms. I mean, it definitely was a process and a journey to get there, right? Like, actually 4 days after I graduated college, I moved to D.C. to intern in the United States Senate for Senator Chris Murphy, who is my senator in Connecticut. And I fell in love with D.C. There's so many reasons to fall in love with it, right? It's so accessible for being disabled. It's so doer-oriented, type A. You actually want to get things done. This is where change happens, and you have to work so hard to be here, right? And I felt like this is where I want to belong. This is where I belong. This is where I want to be. And actually, that whole summer, I was applying for jobs nonstop. And I didn't land anything in D.C. And so I moved back to Connecticut. And I thought it was a failure that I was living with my parents back after college, not knowing what I was going to do. And thinking, wow, I majored in human rights. You could have done something a little bit more hard skill set. And so I started to work on some political campaigns in Connecticut, because when I was still at Trinity College, I was interning in the General Assembly in Connecticut. So I thought it's great to do human rights work, but there is also an intersectionality with politics and public service, which is something that I have constantly fallen in love with. And still to this day, I'm not cynical about anything that I've done. But a lot of dead ends I was coming up against in Connecticut with politics, and it just really didn't seem like it was the right timing or place. And so that's how I ended up at the FSH Society up in Boston in Lexington. And I thought that was a really great experience to get to know other people with FSH, and especially newly diagnosed FSH people and what they're going through on a daily basis. But I ultimately knew that wasn't exactly what I wanted to keep doing. I just wasn't sure what was next. That's how I also started to go back to school at Harvard for nonprofit management, because I wanted to get more concrete skills under my belt, which included grant writing. And so how I got that Obama job over all the years of everything I've done, also in addition, I was invited to go to the White House 25th 88 anniversary in June of 2015 for two of my mentors that invited me to go. And a gentleman from the Presidential Personnel Office was speaking at the White House to us about how Obama had this priority of hiring talented people with disabilities inside his administration. And I remember applying to work inside his administration as an intern 2 years ago while I was sitting and hearing this speak in 2015. And so I just, again, I had that gut feeling of I have to go up to this guy and just say, like, I applied for that. I would love to do this in the future. How could I do this in the future? This is where I'm at right now. What can I keep improving on? Because this is something I would love to do down the line. And he was like, you know, you seem like a very qualified person. Send me your resume and let's just keep the dialogues open and get on some calls. And it seems like we could have you inside the administration if there's some openings. And to, I mean, in that conversation, I was like, all right, that's cool. Awesome. Definitely, it's not going to happen. It's not. But I wholeheartedly, throughout that process of like the vetting process, the interview process, was another great experience of shifting what I learned from swimming over into this, but also just in general of when I really wanted to take a chance on something that I didn't know if it was going to go the way I wanted to or not. A, I'm going to go all in. I'm not going to have anything. And then B, I'm going to wholeheartedly believe in myself because no one else is going to believe in me the way that I can believe in myself. That's just wholeheartedly true. And so even though there, you know, you constantly come up against doubt or questions of, like, am I qualified enough? Like, can I really do this? I was like, you know what, Kristen, you really want to be in D.C. You love this president. You have nothing to lose. The only thing that you have to lose is when you don't believe in yourself and you're going to regret looking back on this and you didn't believe in yourself. So that's kind of a more general overview of how I came about that. Yeah.
In your time there, did you in fact then meet the president?
Yeah, I met him.
You did.
I met him three times. I've met Joe Biden a few times also, and I had the opportunity to bring my mom to the White House and she met the president and Michelle Obama also. Some incredible experiences, really hard, really awesome. And I would do it all over again. There's nothing quite like working for someone you believe in his vision for a country that you used to represent. on Team USA in a sport level. So I don't think I have anything else to say about that. It was great. Yeah.
And now you're doing, you know, still great things. I mean, it sounds like you're working to empower young women with disabilities. That seems to be part of your new mission. What can you tell us a little bit about that?
Thank you. Yeah. You know, it's not my day job, right? But I see that as more of like, regardless of whatever I'm doing, whatever interactions I'm coming across, it's about representation and seeing people for who they are as human beings. And I think that a lot of disabled girls, you know, from personal experiences also, and I used to mentor this incredible young girl that was disabled too, and that's something that's very close to my heart, is young disabled girls, is having them realize that they have always had the strength, they have always had the power inside themselves, because you do, whether you acknowledge it or not, you always will. In my day job, I actually work for FEMA inside the Department of Homeland Security here in D.C. I do transit security grant work in relation to buses, transit, metros, and Amtrak to prevent and mitigate terrorist attacks mostly.
Wow.
And then outside of my day job, I was voted the chairwoman for the first multimodal accessibility advisory council for D.C. So that's essentially in relation to public space, ramps, sidewalks, bus stops, traffic lights, parking spaces, bike share, the scooters that we've been seeing all around different cities in the country. And it's comprised of other citizens with disabilities and working with the D.C. government as to providing recommendations to make public space more inclusive and accessible on a micro level. So it's interesting, right, because I don't necessarily do, you know, disabled women empowerment work with a specific organization or anything, but I don't think you have to. I think you do that just by being who you are. In showing other people with disabilities, whether you're a woman or male or a child, right? You don't have to do this disability work, be disability inclusive. And that's something that I am very aware of, that I do not want to silo myself into being a disability expert because I'm disabled. No, like if we want this world to be fully inclusive, put me in other things that I'm also passionate about, because people with disabilities are so multidimensional. Do not look at us through one frame. Don't even try.
Yeah, because you are a living example of that. You know.
Yeah.
You are practicing what you preach, which is you're putting your money where your mouth is. Add another cliche.
Yeah.
That is what you are. I mean, you. It is inspiring to say the least. You also seem to have a big day today. Tell us about meeting Senator Tammy Duckworth today.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. She's on my fridge, and I told that to her.
Wow.
You know, there's sometimes that I've met presidents. I've met really incredible people. Right, people are people, and she is an incredible woman. I sometimes go into meetings, and I'm like, I'm going to say this, I'm going to hit on these points, and I do that, right? But then sometimes, like today, I interject of like, I have a picture of you on my fridge, and, so, you know, sometimes I really think that my life, it could be this very interesting comedy. Anyway, but she was incredible. To say that she's a role model of mine would be an understatement. She has said that she has earned her chair, that her chair is a source of power, right? Like, we need to shift seeing medical devices or seeing being disabled as some sort of downgrade, when really all this time it's been a human experience. It is literally a human experience. And so when I was speaking with her and I was talking about, you know, how she's my role model and how can we both work together in propelling disability representation, especially for young girls, she said, first, always keep speaking up. Never stop. Second, moving forward. And what she meant by that, too, is that it's funny. She said, I hope more people become disabled, because that means you're living a fulfilling life, because that means that you're living longer, right? And I loved how she was shifting that narrative in that conversation already. It was already making me think about disability differently on that level. And I was thinking to myself, wow, I don't know if I would ever really tell someone, I hope you become disabled one day. But it's going to take me a bit to still process that, but it's true. Like, I hope that you live such a fulfilling life that you understand the means of technology to how you keep living a fulfilling life, to live the best of your contributions that you can to society, and then also that society is inclusive on levels that you can still use your talents towards the passions that you've always wanted to continue to be part of. She is incredible. She's been doing the first of things in U.S. history that we've always needed. And I am so honored that I had the opportunity to just share a little bit of my story and how that she's impacted me in ways that she will never know, and other people too, right? There's always a trickle effect. Everyone's always interdependent. I don't think we work in silos, no matter how different we really think we are. And this was a really beautiful day.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Kristen, for coming on and sharing your life, your passions. Extremely inspiring. I actually really hope that you decide to write a book, or maybe that TV show you kind of hinted about there. There's something there. There's something there, definitely. A good friend of mine said to me, well, he's not an old friend, but he's a new great friend, and he said, you know, sometimes you have so much hope, it'd be a shame not to share it. So we're glad that you shared it today. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Tim. This has been a pleasure.
Take care, Kristen. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that's Kristen Duquette. Phenomenal. There's nothing else you can really say. Phenomenal. What a great life and a lot more to come. I do believe that. Let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll bring in Jun Kinoshita to go over some news, what's going on in the FSH Society. This is the FSH Society. You're listening to FSH Society Radio. Hey everyone, this is Tim, host of FSH Society Radio. And get this, in 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training and cognitive behavioral therapy decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a marked impact of slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So I don't want to hear any excuses. You can get out there, get active, start exercising, and let's start fighting this. Hi, this is Tim again, and have you been recently diagnosed with FSHD and kind of trying to search for answers? I mean, there's so many questions. Where do you go? Well, go to fshsociety.org, join the FSH Society, get educated, because knowledge is power. Get active, connect with local members, volunteer for research, and donate, because without you, we can't fight this. Go to fshsociety.org. Welcome back to the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here, taking the time out of your night to listen to our great featured guest we just had, Kristen Duquette, Phenomenal Life, and shared it with us and all the great things she's been doing, and I think a lot more is going to come for sure. So I know we'll have her back on again to share more of what's going on with Kristen's life. Next up, though, we got June Kinoshita coming on to tell us a little bit about what's going on in the FSH Society world, maybe what events are coming up, meeting groups, etc. So why don't we click on to her live line here. Hi, June, how are you?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Thanks
Hello.
For joining us, June.
Good, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I got these sort of AirPods recently. I don't quite trust them. You know, the wireless earbuds, but they're fun. So, wow, what an interview, and it was so wonderful to hear Kristen's voice. You know, I hired her a few years ago for the FSH Society, and we really miss her, but I was just thinking, you know, she was so wonderful. She would be the person who'd pick up the phone when a family member or a patient would call. They'd just been diagnosed. They felt like their life had just sort of, the floor had fallen out from under them. And she was so compassionate and reassuring, you know, and she could speak from her own authentic
Absolutely.
Voice or her experience that, you know, you're going to be okay. And it just... She was, you know, she was phenomenal. So, and I'm so proud. I'm so, so very proud of where she's gone, how she's pursued all of these opportunities that have come for her, how she is such a powerful advocate for not just for the FSHD community, but for beyond, you know. So, what a wonderful treat to hear her. Mm-hmm. So I know we're just about at the, we've kind of overrun our hour, so I'll keep this really short.
Yeah,
we
right.
have an amazing September and October coming up. We are, you know, we have rolled out our national chapter program, so we have 13 chapters established now. All the leaders have been vetted. They go through quite a rigorous process and trained, and so we have chapter launch events going on all over starting this September 6th, next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, the Connecticut chapter will be launching. They're doing a virtual online event.
Mm-hmm.
So really anyone from anywhere can join in their wonderful group. And there's also Sacramento chapter launch on September 18th, Greater Philadelphia on September 29th. There's so many, but I'm not going to go through them all, but they're all on our calendars. We also have mm-hmm. on September 30th, the Mid-Atlantic FSHD Family Day Conference featuring these world-leading researchers from the Kennedy Krieger Institute in Baltimore. So that's September 30th, a half-day meeting with some of the rock stars of our field, chance to meet dozens and dozens of other families and patients there. So please register for that early. And then we have our, this is our first year, we have our official walk and roll to cure FSHD events going on. We have on September 8th in Colorado, Castle Rock, Colorado, just about an hour south of Denver. We have September 15th in Columbus, Ohio, in close partnership with the Scott Harper and his research team there at Ohio State. We have on September 16th, the Bay Area Walk and Roll in Alameda Point, which is just, you know, just next to Oakland, jutting out into the Bay. Very convenient for anybody in San Francisco and the whole Bay Area. And September 22nd is the Pacific Northwest in Puyallup, Washington, just near Seattle. And there's one more, October 7th. In North Carolina, in mm-hmm. Cary, North Carolina, which is near the Raleigh-Durham area. So this is our first 5 walk and rolls, and we really, if you're anywhere near any of those, please consider attending, because we have these organizers who are working so hard to get this going, and it'll be such a morale boost to have as many people show up as possible. And if you can't be there in person, if you're not near enough, or you have a scheduling conflict, just support a team. Just go to our website, look up Walk and Roll, pick a team, make a donation. It means so much to them. It just gives everybody such a boost. And also, very importantly, this is all about word sharing. You know, make a donation and then tweet it or Facebook it to your network saying you've just supported this cause mm-hmm. that's important to you, and please join me in supporting it. So we hope that, you know, lots of people will join in, and more importantly, will think about organizing one of their own next year. We would love to have a bunch of them in the spring, late April, May period. And we have toolkits. We've made it really out of the box. We've, you know, made it as easy as possible for people to do and to do a good job with it. So think about it. It's an incredibly positive, empowering, and wonderful thing to be able to do. So I think I'll stop there. That's my message for today.
Well, thanks, June, for sharing that message. And, yeah, absolutely. Everybody can go on to fshsociety.org. A lot of information on there. And make sure you take a look at the FSH Watch newsletter as well. Maybe sign up to either get it in print, but it's also available there for online reading as well. I wanted to tell everybody about that. It's got a lot of information and great stories in there. So thanks, June, for joining us tonight, taking the time.
You're so welcome. All right. Thank you. Till next time.
So that's June Kinoshita joining us with some news, some notes, and what's going on at the FSH Society. She gave us a little quick, you know, synopsis of all the good things going on. But without a doubt, the best place to go is fshsociety.org. Now, next show will be next month in September. The last Wednesday of the month, we're going to have our featured guest will be Taylor Quigg. She is a person that actually works with Living Young. I guess you want to call it, I guess what it is. It's like a product line of fantastic products that help you live younger. And she has FSH, and she wants to share her story with us. So I thought, come on in. Let's talk in September a little bit about herself and her family and her FSH story. I find it very fascinating, intriguing, uplifting, like so many we bring in, like Kristen Duquette was this episode. A couple great things that I pointed out in my mind that Kristen said tonight. Two quotes, I guess, that are going to stick with me, I think, for a while. One was, what you do today with will affect your body in the future. So if you're active today, if you get up a little bit more often than you did maybe yesterday, or push a little harder, that'll help you later down the road. That's a great lesson for me personally, as I struggle with, you know, getting myself more and more active and trying to fight the demons of, oh, I don't want to, right? And the other thing I loved what Kristen said was setting my heart on fire. That's how she got inspired, how she just set her heart on fire when she went back in, you know, and swam and started reaching those goals for herself. So I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. I'm glad you guys were here listening and being a part of it. Stay tuned next month. Like I said, we'll have a great guest, Taylor Quigg, on there. Until next time, farewell. Take care. Good night.